Rosetta, now it's time to rise. It's your time to shine and come back to life. So wake up, sleeping satellite. Wake up, Rosetta.
Yes, and Rosetta did wake up after being in hibernation, but guess what? It's going to die in 2 days' time. Yes, we're going to have all the details about that, and we will be shortly having some music to set us in the mood for the Rosetta mission. So let's tell you the new rundown, the news of what's going to happen first, and then we'll get into some music and then some interviews, including one today on an Australian who worked on the mission. Yes, hang out for that. So on Friday morning at 10 to 7 Australian Eastern Time, Rosetta will fire its thrusters for about 3 minutes. This last burn of the engines will be at an altitude of 19 kilometres. The gentle fall to the head of the comet will last nearly 14 hours. The final commands will be sent to Rosetta at about 6 p.m. from NASA's Deep Space Dish in Madrid. These will include pointing instructions based on the tracking of the early stages of the descent trajectory. Impact will occur at 8:40 plus or minus 20 minutes on Friday evening. Now, because the signal from Rosetta will take 40 minutes to reach Earth, we won't know the exact impact time until 9:20 p.m., plus or minus 20 minutes. As soon as Rosetta hits the surface, it will autonomously switch off all instruments and its radio transmitter. Well, yesterday, Rosetta was commanded to arc out to an orbit 16 by 23 kilometers from the comet's center. From there, on Friday, Rosetta will conduct the last thruster burn that will kick it into the final descent. Today, Rosetta and the comet are 574 million kilometres from the Sun and moving away at 1 million kilometres per day. Today, Rosetta and the comet 67P are 739 million kilometres from the Earth. This distance is increasing by 3 million kilometres per day. Rosetta's increasing distance from the Sun is reducing the power generated by its solar panels by 4 watts per day. At the end of August, the power available will be just 936 watts. A minimum of 630 watts is needed to operate the spacecraft. If Rosetta is not crashed into the comet, it will die anyway due to lack of power. Well, since August the 9th, Rosetta has been operating in a flyover regime that takes the spacecraft as close as possible to the comet's surface. A total of 15 very close flyovers have been made, the most recent on September 17 and 20. On September the 5th, Rosetta skimmed the comet just 3.9 kilometres from its centre of mass. This was about 1.9 kilometres from the duck-shaped comet's surface. The irregular shape of comet 67P means the gravitational field is complex, making navigation of Rosetta very, very difficult. Those close flybys have provided excellent opportunities for close-up science observations. This is not only spectacular photography, but also dust measurements and magnetic field data have been gathered. And by the way, there's still a heck of a lot of dust around the comet, and Rosetta's been flying through it. The gravity of 67P and the gas jets have sometimes twisted Rosetta's pointing accuracy off target by as much as 8 degrees. This pointing error has had one unexpected blessing. Philae was found because the OSIRIS camera was pointing the wrong way. This will eliminate any risk that, by turning off the transmitter, this will eliminate any risk that the future its transmissions will be on broadcast frequencies used by other spacecraft. So we don't want unwanted transmissions interfering with other interplanetary craft. There is a small risk that the body of Rosetta could survive the walking speed crash into the head of 67P. Such transmissions could jeopardize future space missions. So the hard mission working controllers in Darmstadt will be given the weekend off. Monday is a public holiday in Germany, so on Tuesday they'll be back at work but reassigned to other missions. The scientists, on the other hand, still have years of work ahead of them analysing the treasure trove of data returned by Rosetta. Well, we're going to hear a piece of music now about how Rosetta was being put to sleep for 2 years whilst en route to comet Churyumov-Gerasimenko. It's a song by Chiara Bernardelli, and Chiara is a singer-songwriter from Glasgow in Scotland. The song is called Deep Space Hibernation.
There's a rocket out in space. It's been sleeping for 2 whole years, resting. It's metal, conserving energy for what lies ahead. Deep space hibernation. That's the name. Deep space hibernation. Nursing the flame. The fire.
Wonderful music there by...
Thanks.
Yeah, Chiara Bernardelli, all the way from Glasgow. Now, not so far away, although he has been up that sort of way. Simon Barraclough now works at the University of New South Wales in Canberra, but he did work in England on the Rosetta spacecraft. And I had a chat to him this afternoon at the Australian Space Development Conference, which has been running at RMIT University. And here's how our conversation went. Hi, Simon. Could you identify yourself, please?
Yes, my name is Simon Barraclough. I'm a space research engineer at UNSW in Canberra.
Now, Simon, you've been working on the Rosetta mission in some way.
Yes, I had worked on it back in the days when we were building it. So we at Stevenage, for part of Airbus, it was Matthew McConey at the time, were the prime contractors for the platform. So my role was doing the thermal analysis for the mission. So there were particular interesting aspects to do with the hibernation and the operations around comets and the asteroid flybys. We analysed the spacecraft and then affected the design where required to survive those environments. And in particular, hibernation was a big thing for us because the spacecraft had to turn off, basically hibernate for many, many years. We couldn't communicate to it because we couldn't afford the power because it went so far from the sun, went out to almost Jupiter. So we had to sort of shut down, and we had to design a thermal system that would guarantee that it would wake up. Quite important, and you know, mission. So we developed, a whole team of people, of course, new designs for insulation blankets, and some that we procured and further developed louvers for protecting radiators and various sort of features that would allow the spacecraft to survive in the cold environment. But then function properly when it got nearer the sun, and as it has done, gone past the sun and heading back out again. So,
yes, and when it came out of hibernation, there was the Wake Up Rosetta campaign.
Yep.
And we've been using as our theme music for Rosetta, Tasman Archer's Wake Up Rosetta.
Oh, okay, yeah, very good.
Sleeping satellite.
Yeah, sure, yeah. Well, yeah, I remember the wake up because, of course, for me and the other thermal engineers, that was the most nervous bit because if it didn't wake up, well, we probably would have been going on the neck for that. So, yeah, but it was great to see the spike in the signal when it appeared, and we were quite relieved at that point. So,
and we're going to see that spike in the signal disappear in a few days' time.
Yes. Well, from what I understand, yes, they have to dispose of Rosetta. It can't survive. Now it's following the comet. The orbit for the comet is much further out from the sun than obviously what Rosetta did in the hibernation. So there's no chance of it surviving as it continues on this orbit. So they have to dispose of it. So one nice thing they can do now is they have got to the point where they're so far from the sun, they have to, you can't generate much more power. But if you get nearer the comet, you can do some good science. So they're going to try and land it. Crash it, should I say, very slowly, and on the way down, try and grab that science as much as they can and communicate it back as fast as they can, because when it lands, they're going to tell it to shut down properly, because they don't want a spacecraft that's partially damaged, and if it's partially damaged, maybe the communication system keeps functioning, and we can't turn it off, and it becomes a sort of a polluter for the RF environment for the other spacecraft.
Yes, that it would be interfering with communications on future spacecraft.
Potentially, exactly. So that's what so it would have been nice to think maybe if it did land and kind of survive on the surface, we could have got some nice pictures, but it's too risky. And ESA, of course, being a responsible organisation, want to make sure they're managing their risk appropriately. So they've decided that they'd have to have the spacecraft shut off when it gets onto the surface. So.
And even if it didn't shut off, the chances of the antenna still pointing towards the Earth is almost zero.
Yeah, it's true. I don't know which surface. I think it's the plus Z surface of the spacecraft is the one they're probably going to have pointing towards the ground. The antenna is on the minus Z, so maybe if you did land it away and happened to not tip over, the antenna could still operate, but it's highly risky. I mean, it was never part of the design. We didn't design the thing to be a lander, so we can't say for sure how it would work or if it would work. So the best thing is make it safe, shut it off, and that's what they're going to do. So
will you be shedding a tear on Friday?
No, I mean, someone else asked me this, but it is a celebration because, you know, we didn't design it to survive any further than this. It has done its mission, and even PhilA has done its mission, and they discovered where it landed, which is great because one of the experiments can now pinpoint where the radio signals were coming from PhilA. So it was an experiment on Rosetta called Concert, which is picking up the radio signals and looking at the internal structure of the comet. But that had a bit of an error because they didn't know where it landed. So now they know where it landed, they can get some good science. So all those things have happened and done really well. It served its purpose, and but it's going to continue to do good science because as on the way down, they're going to get very detailed photos of where they're landing, and they're going to pick up more and more material as they get closer and do better analysis. So yeah, it's a celebration, I'd say. I wouldn't be sad about it.
15 years ago you were working on it then?
Yes, I was. Yeah. So I'd moved to from Australia. I went to RMIT Aerospace here. Moved in 98 and started working at Rosetta about 2000 to about 2004. So on and off in different capacities, but involved when we were doing the final build and the verification activities and testing and so forth to prove that, yeah, it would work in the environment. So.
And have you been following the mission since?
Oh, yeah, well, not. I mean, obviously it was strange because when we launched it, we're thinking, oh, all right, that's it now for 14 years. I mean, we all moved on, of course, and did other projects and had, you know, have to do other work. And then come along later and, you know, in 2014 and say, oh, yeah, Rosetta. But it was nice. There was one particular thing I do remember. I had to do an analysis of the thruster profile. So when the thruster temperature, when you turn it on, it gets hot and cools down again. They use that temperature sensor to determine whether they'd arrived at the comet or not, because they knew when the burn had finished, when the thruster burn. So they used the temperature sensor detail of the thruster profile as it got hot and cold and said, okay, we've arrived at the comet. I did that. I was looking on the TV screen going, oh, I did that. I recognize that plot because I did the analysis that was looking at that. And then suddenly on the TV screen in 2014, they're going, oh, yeah, looking at the plot. There it is. And so for me, while everyone was getting excited by the analysis, hey, you've arrived, I'm looking at the little picture down the side going, oh, I recognize that plot. I did that. So it's great. Yeah, it's really good. So.
Well, thanks for joining us on the Space Show.
Yep, all right. Thank you very much. Very good.
And I was in conversation there just a few hours ago with Simon Barraclough, who is now at the University of New South Wales in Canberra. Well, more about the landing of Rosetta. As I said, the mission is going to end on September 30, that's Friday, at about 8:40 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time, plus or minus 20 minutes. The landing will be in the Mahart region on the head of Comet Churyumov-Gerasimenko. And nearby, by the landing area, are several active pits. They're more than 100 metres in diameter and 50 metres deep. And this is where a number of the comet's dust jets originate. So the exact touchdown point is planned adjacent to a 130-metre-wide, well-defined pit, informally known as Deir el-Medina. The target ellipse is 700 by 500 metres. Then the final descent, as we've said before, will be a free fall from an altitude of 20 kilometres. And the touchdown point will be in sunlight, and the data will be streamed back right up until impact, which could be into one of the pits. And as I said, Rosetta will be switched off just prior to impact. Now, Deir el-Medina, the touchdown point, is on the opposite side of the head from Abydos, which is where Philae lies dormant. The impact velocity will be around about 90 centimetres per second. That's around about walking pace, and obviously it's going to wreck much of Rosetta, particularly the solar panels. Well, there have been some good findings about Rosetta, and here's a feature from the European Space Agency about those.
It is now over 2 years since Rosetta made its rendezvous with comet 67P Churyumov-Gerasimenko. Back then, it was 100 kilometres away, but after some complex operational manoeuvres, it began a series of flybys and orbits at increasingly shorter distances. The comet, alongside the spacecraft, is now heading towards Jupiter, and Rosetta is nearing the end of its mission. But recently, the orbiter got spectacularly close to the surface, up to an amazing 3 kilometres, allowing detailed views of the comet's cliffs, boulders and plains. A year ago, this would have been impossible. The comet was at perihelion, its closest distance to the Sun, and also at its most active, spewing out dust, gas and plasma. This meant Rosetta had to remain at a safe distance of up to 300 kilometres. But these newer, closer passes mean that scientists can observe changes in the comet over time using onboard cameras such as a Cirrus.
The most prominent, the most exciting changes on the surface, I believe it is still the big drop in the Imhotep plateau, which was 3 meters and 100 meters in height and hundreds of meters in radius. But we have seen smaller scale features like a boulder, which was at least 50 meters big, it was 10 tons heavy, which, well, on the comet is just a chocolate bar of 100 grams or so, but still it's a massive thing, which has moved by 140 meters, likely due to activity, but we don't know the real reason.
Even as the mission is coming to a close, Rosetta remains busy. In June, it completed a two-week remapping campaign of the comet's northern hemisphere to produce a new, higher-resolution 3D model that can be used to see large-scale changes of the comet and also where it has lost mass. Mission scientists from the 21 instruments on board Rosetta and its Philae lander, which was finally switched off in July, have also combined findings to gain a more complete picture of the comet.
In particular, what we have observed is that the nucleus is composed of a mixture of materials like minerals, like silicates and sulfides, which have been formed in the inner part of the solar system, close to the Sun, at temperature relatively high.
It has been an audacious mission, gaining knowledge about the comet's surface, coma, tails and interior. But the final month still offers further scientific opportunities.
So at the moment, as it's really getting to an end, we will be able to get very close to the nucleus and make measurements that was not that were not possible before. So that's the very exciting part of the end of mission scenario.
The end will be September the 30th, but it won't be the end of the mission science. When Rosetta spirals down to the comet's surface for a controlled descent, it will take images and perform measurements until impact. Excitingly, the landing site on the head of the duck-shaped comet is in a region with active pits. Data collected from Comet 67P will keep scientists busy for decades to provide our most complete understanding of a comet yet and making history as the first ever mission to orbit and land on a comet.
On the space show, we are discussing the Rosetta mission. Now, Rosetta has spawned a great deal of artwork, music, we've heard some of it on the show tonight, and we're going to hear more, and also poetry. Yes, poetry. And this poem was written and it's read by John Morris, and it's called All Alone on Rosetta's Stone.
All Alone on Rosetta's Stone. It's so very dark and lonely, perched up here on Rosetta's Stone, hurtling through the expanse of space, 300 million miles from home. And I'm only a very tiny thing, about the size of a washing machine. But here I am, I've boldly gone, where no appliance before has been. I lie on my side in the shadows, all around me mountains tower. I would really like to stand upright, but I just don't have the power. My batteries are going flat. I'm fading and getting weaker. I'm stuck here and there's no escape. My prospects could not be bleaker. But I'll carry on right to the end. I will bravely show defiance and do all of my experiments, 'cause I'm an appliance of science. No longer can I see the Earth, I'm such a distance from it. So just think of me next time you see a washing machine in Comet.
Yeah, that poem by John Morris about Philae and how it died on the comet, Acterium of Gerasimenko, which, by the way, is about 4 kilometres long and about 2 or 3 wide, and it's shaped like a little rubber ducky. Well, we're now going to hear some sound based on the plasma recordings. We explained those in last week's show. And this one is, you know, the woodpecker sort of sound. And this one is by A Sound Escapes, and it's called Rosetta Mind.
Thank you.
as I said, based on the plasma wave recordings from Rosetta, the oscillations in the magnetic and electric fields around the comet. That was A Sound Escapes playing Rosetta Mind. Well, more approachable sort of music is going to be released. It was supposed to have been come out last Friday, but they put it back. There are now two sleeps to go until the Vangelis CD about the Rosetta mission is released. The first studio album for many years is due to go on sale this Friday now. It was going to be last Friday, but now it's been this Friday. Oh, that's the landing day. Yes. No wonder they put it out then. Well, the music on it was inspired by the Rosetta mission and follows on from the three tracks written 2 years ago as Rosetta began orbiting Comet Churyumov-Gerasimenko. So that's watch out for that. It's called Rosetta. It's by Vangelis. Well, let's now go to some more music about the comet. This is by Rio, and it's called Comet Hymn. 67P Remix, The Singing Comet, Rio. You've been listening to The Space Show with Andrew Rennie. And we're going to play out now with some Rosetta music until Nick Black at 8 o'clock.